This is an extemporaneous Christian Science prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. The topic of this prayer treatment is 7 Love. Effective healing begins with these steps. The beginning of the title of 7 Love is basically telling us that the synonymous term for God, which is entitled love, is the 7th of the 7 in the order of development as specified in Genesis chapter 1 of the Bible. The definition of God from which this is derived is on page 465, which is a chapter on recapitulation of the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy. And that is the first definition of 24 questions and answers that really summarize chapters 1 through 13 of the textbook, this being chapter 14. The definition of God is as follows, as stated on page 465. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. The reason that love is number 7 is because love is considered fulfillment, wholeness, completeness, and you cannot experience wholeness and completeness unless you have developed at least a partial understanding of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. So therefore, it is number 7, and it really means exactly what I said. Now, in order to have that fulfillment or completeness or wholeness, what we need to do is one of the most important features of love, and that is to nurture new ideas. What is the most fulfilling action that one can take, which means it would fulfill the requirements of love in that one particular direction? Nurture a life of giving. Now, the very first step in preparing for effective healing is what had been discussed in a prior MP3, the one immediately before this one, and that is we have to have our thought prepared, which means that we have to come to the point where we feel there has to be some better way than what we are experiencing. We may not have any idea what it is, but we have our thought open to spirituality, even though we may have not discovered anything about Christian Science or the system of divine metaphysics. In the prior recording on prayer treatment regarding effective healing, which was yesterday, June 27, the definition of divine metaphysics was read to you from both pages 146 and 330 of the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy. Whenever we are going to study, it is highly recommended that we review the 3 definitions at the beginning of the textbook, and also keep in mind the paragraph on page 146 and on 330, because that's really the foundation of everything about Christian Science, everything about Christianity, everything about the Golden Rule, everything about the definition of God, everything about everything that Mary Baker Eddy published. And I will repeat right now the quotation that was recited in the prior recording from Einstein. And he said that religion without science is blind, and science without religion is lame. Now, those are dramatic statements, considering he devoted his entire lifetime focusing on matter. Because up until Mary Baker Eddy arrived on the scene, everyone was totally convinced that matter was what we were dealing with as the only substance. And that's one of the reasons why Mary Baker Eddy was attacked so often from every angle. She was upsetting the entire thought process of what the human mind believed to be true. But she answers that by saying that what the human mind believes to be true is lie compounded upon lie. And she also said that the lie and the liar are the same. Why? Because a lie is not real and it has no opportunity to be believed until we open the door and let it in to our consciousness. It cannot get into our consciousness by itself. We have to admit it. Now, it may be there in an involuntary way, just from universal human belief. But we're not aware that it's there. If it was involuntary, it would be considered latent. And the latency could be totally independent of us having any knowledge of it. Think about this second step, and that is cultivate a life of giving. Be creative. God gives us that capacity. He gives us the capacity for all of our faculties, and that includes thinking, contemplation, originality. Why do I include originality? All existence is a manifestation of God. There's approximately 8.3 billion people on planet Earth. Every single one is an individual with its own uniqueness. Everyone reflects God if we look at their true self, and each one has unique characteristics. The voice is one way to refer to that. Even with 8.3 billion people, there are no two people that have exactly the same voice. When a woman has babies, and there may be twins, or triplets, or four, I don't know how many it is, I think maybe as many as five or six have been born from the same woman. Whatever the record is, each one of them are different. When you and I look at them, they may look the same. But the mother can tell. One thing that Mary Baker Eddy did that was very important for us to remember is that she devoted time every waking hour to self-examine her consciousness to make sure that she was only thinking good in all directions, no matter if there was an individual involved or not, an event involved or not, a relationship. Well, that's really an event, I guess. But it doesn't matter what the topic is. She examined herself to make sure she was only thinking God-like qualities about whatever the topic was. Not something less, but the full godlike quality. Everyone else may be seeing that same topic or individual or whatever it is in a different light. And they will be, because there's no two people that are looking at the same thing or same individual exactly the same way. Because their experience in life is having an impact on what is in their consciousness, and what is in their consciousness is what they see. In other words, what one is looking at gives a translation which is different for everyone, because everyone has had a difference in their experience, and their experience has a direct influence on how one interprets what they are looking at. There's no question that Mary Beck Reddy has been the most spiritual woman that ever existed on planet Earth. And if she had to remind herself to self-examine every hour of the day, what do you think we should be doing? Probably every 5 minutes. Because she was probably 12 times more spiritual than any one of us. If one looks at the derivation of the word God in the way it is used in the Bible, each time they will see that it's not the same root word of Elohim. Genesis chapter 1 uses Elohim, but then it changes when it starts talking about Adam and Eve in chapter 2. It's referring to Jehovah. And it says Lord God. It doesn't use the terms Lord God when it's referring in chapter 1. So that's one clue that we should be utilizing to make sure that we know which God is being discussed. Is it the pure, perfect, real God, as is referred to God in Genesis, the first chapter and first three verses of the second, before there was a mist, because that's what it says at the beginning, when the term for God changed in definition. And it clearly states that it was a different view from the writer, and therefore not the same God. Which means it was a fake God. Which means that it was a material aspect that was in the view. Three people could have been looking at the same thing that was referred to as Lord God and see something similar about it, but not identical. Because the whole story in Genesis chapter 2 is not reality. It is not the background of our DNA or anyone else's DNA, if we're talking about the real man. And that's the only one we should be referring to, and that's the one that Mary Baker Eddy made sure her thought was directed in that way, and interrupting what she was doing every hour, her whole day and night, up until she went to bed, which probably was not before midnight, I don't know, just a guess. But if we have the burning desire that is required in order to totally transform our consciousness, then we have no choice. we have to constantly monitor everything we're thinking, everything we're talking, everything we're doing. We must use all five spiritual senses of sight, hearing, feel, taste, and smell, or we're not going to get anywhere in cultivating an ability for effective healing. We have to give ourselves up totally as being ours and accept that it is God's. We have put a diagram, I think it's even two diagrams on the same presentation, about ways that one can give. But it's better if you create what you understand to be giving. What skills, talents, characteristics are very special about you. And you're not boastful about it, but you want to share with others. You have to have a desire to do that. And make sure that you're giving credit to anything or anyone besides yourself. Because if you're only giving credit to yourself, then you have not met the requirement that was part of what was just recited to you. We want to be independent in the terms of being unbiased, but we don't want to try to be independent of God, because the laws of the universe is what God is. And if we're trying to overlook one that maybe we don't like, or maybe two or three, maybe all of them, we don't like, because it's going to force us to think about things we don't want to think about. It's a lot easier to fix something before it gets too broken and for too long, because error, evil, continues to grow if it's ignored. Once we are aware that it exists in terms of appearance, we cannot ignore it. At the onset of our belief that it is real, we have to take some very vivid steps. And it will be more effective in proportion to our conviction of what we're saying. Frederick L. Rawson, who was mentioned as one of the three that had 15-minute appointments all day long, and at the end of the 15 minutes, the healing was effective for each one of their clients. He doesn't say how long he was in the practice, but the other two do, and Wentworth Winslow publicly stated he had been in the practice for 35 years. And Joel Goldsmith is kind of difficult to know for sure, but he was in one office for 16 years until the board of directors of the Mother Church chased him out of town because everybody was going to him for healing because his healing was real and no one else was having any healings. But they didn't want to lose their patients, for which they weren't doing any good for. It reminds me of what my dad told me about a joke. And it was about a father and son. And the father was an attorney. And the son, under the influence of the father, went to law school and graduated. And the plan was for him to be a part of the law practice that his dad had started. So he did. He joined after he got his license from the bar. And soon after that, his dad said, "Well, I can finally take a vacation. I haven't had anyone that I could really rely on. And now that you're here, I know I can trust you. So I'm going to take a vacation, and you're in charge of the office for the next couple of weeks until I get back." So when he came back from vacation and he went into the office, the son was so excited. He said, "Dad, you know that case about Jones versus Brown?" He said, "Yeah, I know about it. We've had it for many, many years." He said, "Why, what about it?" He said, "I settled it. I talked to each of the parties. And then we had a meeting together, the three of us. We came to an agreement. Everyone's happy." The father said, "Are you crazy? What do you think we've been living off of all these years?" They'd been living off of the fees of a lawsuit that just went on and on and on and on. And the father didn't have any intention of solving it. His morals were not very high. And the son was a shiny new lawyer, and he wanted to do things right. It takes almost nothing between two humans, so-called humans, to have a conflict with each other. And a misunderstanding on the tiniest little thing can rile the emotions and blow it totally out of proportion. That's not cultivating a life of giving. One of the things we need to give is the benefit of the doubt to the other party. Dale Carnegie said something along this line. He was a very wonderful trainer of success and overcoming fears and so forth. And he said, "Never make a strong opinion about something to someone." He says, "Because you may become enlightened after you say that, maybe the next day or 5 minutes later, or 5 hours, 5 days, months, 5 years later, doesn't matter." He said, "If you come to a point where you have been enlightened on different factors that you were not aware of, you may change your mind and totally agree with the one you had this great conflict with." So he says it is much better to be humble and say, "Well, that's an interesting viewpoint. I'm going to consider that. Think about it. Contemplate it." You're not going to make any friends by being aggressively against someone or their opinion. God is the one that's infinite, not his reflection, which is you and me. He's not going to waste his time, the individual, by getting angry if he thinks he has to change his mind later because it's been proven to him, or he proved it to himself, that he was wrong. When one does not get themselves out of the way and look for the answer in the seven synonymous terms for God, then there's going to be many mistakes. Probably almost every decision is going to be a mistake. The truth is always there, but often a so-called human is not willing to look for the truth. Instead, they're looking for something to rationalize their opinion. They try to do some reverse engineering. There are many ways for two different people to look at the same thing because they have different experiences. And that experience that each one has, as already stated, is going to have an impact on what they are looking at or thinking about or hearing, smelling, taste, everything is affected by our life experience. Some children are a second or third generation Christian Scientist, which means that their family probably never discussed diseases, and the children never attended any classes in school that had anything to do with the body. As a result, the way that kind of a child thinks about anything to do with something unlike God is completely different than ones who have brought up believing a totally different way. Children that are brought up the way of matter and materiality, that it being active, they might have a small injury. Who knows, maybe they're playing and they fell down or whatever. Let's suppose there was a breakage in the skin and it was bleeding. The one that experiences that did not have a Christian Science background, may immediately go to where their medicine is and apply some medicine to that, whatever spot was cut, that's bleeding. And the other one, if that happened to them, may just go somewhere in the bathroom or wherever and wash it and put a Band-Aid on it and forget it. I mean, they don't want to just to let it bleed, so they'd want to, you know, just clean it, you know, soap and water, or maybe just water, whatever the case may call for intelligently to do without entering into the realm of matter and drugs and medicine and that kind of thing. I remember reading about a case many years ago where a child of a Christian Science family passed on. And boy, you wouldn't believe how that was blown out of proportion. Trying to say that the entire religion was no good because there was one death. Do you have any idea what the third greatest cause of death is in the United States? The third. I just read this in the last few days. The third greatest cause of death in the United States is medical mistakes made by doctors. Medical mistakes made by doctors. Giving medicine to somebody that's allergic to it, prescribing the wrong drug, a total incorrect analysis of the problem, whatever it is, the third greatest cause of death in the U.S. We're going to put that up on the website just to publish what is published independently by someone who did thorough research on it, or an institution that did thorough research on it. It could have even been by RFK Jr., the son of the man that was murdered soon after his brother was murdered, which was JFK, the president, and his brother was the I think he was the Department of Justice, the Attorney General of the U.S. He was murdered because after his brother was murdered, they decided that he would be running for president, and he was murdered right away. So his son is now active in the administration with the President of the United States, in charge of, I think it's called HHS, Homeland Security. I don't know what the second H is, but anyway, Homeland Security. And he has spent his life going after drug companies and anyone involved in polluting the water. Because he got in trouble when he was a young man. He'd already been out of law school. And he got in trouble. And his penalty was community service. He really got an interest in community service. And one thing he found was that the Hudson River, which was in New York, which is where he was residing, was the dirtiest river in the U.S., the most unsanitary. Companies were dumping their garbage in there, chemicals, whatever they wanted to get rid of. They just piped it into the river. They'd been doing it for a long time. It was totally ridiculous. So he started doing research on what all these corporations were involved in and what they were putting into the river. And he's been suing them his whole life. And he turned, because of his efforts, the dirtiest river in the U.S. to the cleanest one. The cleanest one in a major city. That's like Rudy Giuliani and the police commissioner that he appointed. I think his name is Bernie Kerik. And they turned New York City from the worst crime city, large crime city in America, to the cleanest, most crime-free city. I mean, they had to get rid of the mafia, all these drug gangs. I mean, they had to, unbelievable what they had to do. And they did it. And they did it. They were attacked because of it, not by the population, but by all the people that were making money off of the crime that was going on. So, I don't know whether he's the one, but he has been going after the drug companies and any companies that were polluting the natural water streams and putting the fluoride in the drinking water, all this kind of stuff that is really known to be harmful to be consuming. But the lobbies for all these companies that are making so much profit off of it is so intense that they do whatever they have to convince the politicians to vote the way they want them to vote. And the politicians are, you know, open arms because they get paid under the table for doing what they're doing. So this is all coming to a screeching halt. Thank you, Mr. President, and your team. And the U.S. has allied itself with something like 100 different countries who want to do the same thing that our president is doing. They want to clean it up. El Salvador, a great example. The president, I think it's the president, maybe he's called the prime minister, the one in charge, he has done just a phenomenal job of doing the same thing with that government that our president and his team are doing in the U.S. everyone that is making a contribution to expose evil, not the person, but the evil, and doing something about it. I know of some that are running for political office because they know the ones in there are basically getting paid under the table for the evil acts that they're involved in. I mean, there's just a lot of things being exposed on an accelerating basis just in the last few weeks. And everything is done with a grand strategic plan, because the human brain, as noted in these prayer treatments, does not easily accept anything that is contrary to what it previously believed was true. So there has to be a drip, drip, drip policy of releasing information, otherwise it will be totally rejected. But now there's so much coming out that is publicly available to be seen, articles to be read, videos to be watched, and so forth, and even some movies are being released, that it's to the point that the can of, or the container of Pandora's box is open, the genie is out, and you can't put them back. It's like you cannot unsee something that you've seen. It takes a tremendous amount of effort to clean out of consciousness something that you've seen that made an impression on you, whether it was good or bad. We all have our own individual ways that we can give. But the point is, we need to cultivate a desire to do it. And that can be much more easily accomplished when we see there are results from doing it. Mary Baker Eddy said that the absolute most pleasure anyone can ever get out of some activity that they do is by giving to someone in need something that they need, and doing it in a way that is anonymous, so that it eliminates the possibility of feeding the ego of a so-called human mind. The idea is to do it because you know it needs to be done and you want to help. And it doesn't matter what it is. And don't just think of money. And especially do not give money to these large charity organizations, because the wealthiest man in the world, you all know who he is. Again, we try not to name names because we want to separate the good and the evil from the individual. Because anything good done, it's really a result of a force much greater than an individual. And anything evil done is attaching evil to a personality, which doesn't get rid of the evil anyway. But anyway, he, along with the total support of our president, started a department called DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. And they just found that almost every tax dollar was being diverted through a program called USAID. And you would think that sounds wholesome, USAID. But it was a whole a money laundering operation. That's one reason our debt just keeps climbing and climbing. Because the tax dollars that are collected, which are huge, was all being siphoned off. Bribery is the most common activity with the politicians. And it's not all their fault. You know, they entice them. Maybe they get them drugged up and at a party or something, and then they entice them with things that are unmentionable. But there's so many ways that an individual can give. Always try to give a hand up instead of a hand out, if you can do it. The Institute knows of an individual that came out of a big department store, and he was approached by a guy that was clean looking. I mean, he didn't look like he was homeless or anything. And he was basically begging for money. And so the guy asked him, "Well, you look like you're ready to go to work. Why are you begging for money?" He said, "Well, I lost my job. And I haven't eaten in 2 days. So I finally lowered myself to do what I'm doing. To just get some money to eat." So the fellow that was approached, instead of just giving him money, he's a guy that likes to find out what the problem is before he tries to solve it. Because so many people are acting on emotion. And that's what this guy was acting on. He was begging for money. But that wasn't really what he needed. Because when they got into a conversation, and he asked him, he said, "Well, what do you do?" He said, "I'm a handyman. I love to solve problems and fix things. I've been doing it all my life. I love it." It just so happens the individual that he approached had been accumulating a list of things that needed done at his house. And they're all little things, but they did involve a lot of different skills. Electrical, plumbing, carpentry. He had a microwave that wasn't working. The way this story ends up is that he ended up hiring the guy, and it took him 3 months to finish all the work. And he had found another job full-time to start the day after he finished with his work. So there was not even a transition period. It was immediate. But it was only because the fellow that was approached for a donation took the time to find out what the problem was. The guy didn't really want to beg. He really got to the point that he didn't have any food to eat for 2 days before he did it. And he was a skilled worker. He did a good job on everything he worked on. He replaced the need to have all these different people come there to get it done. He would have needed to have an electrician, a plumber, a carpenter. He would have had to send off the microwave to the factory. And it was out of warranty because it had been more than whatever the time for the warranty was. If we don't make an effort, we cannot solve the problem. If we give foolishly, then we are foolish. I didn't finish what I was going to tell you about the big non-profit organizations. So UNICEF is an organization that was by the United Nations, and it was supposed to be for helping children. And it's a money laundering operation. The whole thing is a money laundering operation. And the DOGE department did an analysis by following the money that went from these tax dollars, donations from the U.S. government to these various nonprofit organizations, and they found that the most that was spent on what they were advertising to get, that they were soliciting the donations for the purpose of what they were advertising, that the most that ever got passed down to the individuals they were soliciting on behalf of, supposedly, the most that ever got trickled down to the end individual was 5%. 5%. Out of every $100, only $5 got to the bottom. The other $95 was pilfered by the ones involved in the organization and raising the money and putting the ads together and, you know, everything that was related. 95% fraud and 5%, and he said that was the most. He said some of them didn't filter anything down. So it was between 0 and 5% that actually got down to the people they were involved in that was, they were supposedly soliciting the money for their benefit. 0 to 5%. So I would say the Institute recommends you don't give anything to any institution unless you know the people involved and you have some way of making sure that they do what the intent was. Now, of course, if you're giving a very small donation, this doesn't work. I'm talking about people that are going to make a commitment, maybe a monthly commitment, or someone that is going to put them in their will or their trust so that when they pass on, you know, a chunk of it will go to the nonprofit that they're familiar with. Think of everything that is a talent. Any profession you worked in. Are any of these things that you can pass on for the benefit of people that don't have the opportunity to be able to learn those things? Maybe they have to go to a school and they have to pay a fee, or to a university and pay tuition. There are infinite number of ways for us to be involved in solving the problem of the homeless. If everyone would take under their wing one person, we wouldn't have enough problems to solve. Because there's certainly fewer than 50% of the population that is in need. So if the 50% that are not in need take on one individual that is in need, and everybody did that, we would have our homeless and people that are down on their luck solved in 1 week. It'd be solved. Mary Baker Eddy, when asked about how much should they do on something or something else or whatever, she said everyone can do more than they do. And she included herself. Everyone. She emphasized the word everyone can do more than they do. The average person spends several hours a day texting back and forth. I don't like texting at all. Something you can say in 10 minutes in a phone call, you can easily take an hour texting back and forth. You know, it's a unilateral thing to text. Whereas a phone call is a bilateral. You can get the conversation over quickly, maybe even 5 minutes, instead of a 1 hour deal on texting. And the biggest crime is that the texting takes away from other things that are important to do. We need to be intelligent in everything that we do, and if we're not, we're not reflecting God, because God is omni-intelligent. There is no single word or phrase or sentence that can be constructed in the English language, and I'm sure it's the way in every language, that is adequate to indicate the importance of cultivating a life of giving, because that is going to have a direct impact on your healing effort. Direct impact. And it's probably a multiple. In other words, instead of only being one thing, it's two or three things. Two or three items of importance. If you haven't given something of value to someone that was really in need, and do it in a way that it was anonymous, then you have no idea of what I'm discussing. One way you can gain confidence is to read the last 101 pages of the textbook, which is on the fruitage, 486 healings by 85 different people, and they did it by strictly reading the textbook. Read the introduction to the chapter, chapter 18. It starts on page 600. Just read the introduction. It will tell you. And all of these came from what has already been published before in the Christian Science Sentinel and the Christian Science Journal, a weekly and a monthly publication. They've already been published. And all Mary Baker Eddy did was go through and select enough to cover what she thought were important, the most important. There's a wonderful opportunity right staring us in the face. And that opportunity is to be a reflection of love, because love is giving. Giving in a spiritual way, one that really counts. Helping people that are desperate. There's a movie called Pay It Forward. Another one called Stand and Deliver. Stand and Deliver has a little part of the beginning that's in very colorful language. Well, today it's a modest profanity. The profanity today is, the publicly stated words are so low in class and caliber and morality that I'm hoping, just hoping, that something is going to be done about it. It used to be that no one could say any profane word on television. Now it's the opposite. You're considered weird if you don't blend in with the foul language. Well, it's a good thing you didn't go to the school that I went to. Our family have three sisters. We all went to the same school for 12 years. By the way, we all had perfect attendance records. Perfect attendance. My three sisters and myself never missed a day. Not a day in 12 years. The school had never had any single student that had perfect attendance for 12 years, let alone an entire family. They didn't hardly know what to do with this information. They give you a certificate at the end of each year. That's what they give you. But we had a moral standard in our family. If there was something we should be doing, we did our best to do it. Going to school was an easy choice. We have so many different things we can give. So don't ever use the excuse that you don't have the money to even pay your bills, and you therefore, why are you going to give it away? That's a poor excuse, because that means you're a money manager failure. So you gotta stop the hole in the bottom of the boat first. Something that's very important to remember is that if you are referring to a quotation out of the Bible or Science and Health or one of other Mary Baker Eddy's other writings or the writings of anyone on the website, make sure that you are tailoring it to yourself. And after you study for a while, you'll get more used to understanding what I'm saying. But don't just make a quote and say, yeah, that sounds pretty good. You're wasting your time if you do that. What you need to do is to go to a good source to buy what you need to buy to do what you want to do. And you think it through in advance. And you structure it in a way that's going to be most effective. And you try to get yourself totally out of the picture. Now, if you're the wealthiest man in the world, you're probably going to have to wear a disguise. if you're going to be the one yourself that helps to help someone, of course, you're probably helping 100,000 people at a time, which is wonderful. But unless you're a famous personality, it's pretty easy to be anonymous. If you walk into an area, and I wouldn't recommend this for a woman, and certainly not for children, but if you walk into an area where these people are living, could be on the main street downtown, because they're doing that in cities like Los Angeles, Seattle, and Portland. The blue states have them all over the place because they burn down their own cities. So it's not difficult to find someone in need. So you need to do your research and decide how you can best help them after having some conversation with them. Giving them money to do what they have a need for is probably not the solution. Because if they're begging you for money, they are probably a poor money manager. But they may not be. They may have gotten so desperate that they had no other alternative but to do what that one individual did in soliciting people coming out of the department store. What do I mean when I say you need to individualize or tailor a quotation to you individually? Let's close with the scientific statement of being, and I'll use that as an example, and we'll tear it apart a little bit and do some supplements or replacement of words for things that could apply to someone that is in need that is stating it. The very first phrase is, there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. Suppose you have a problem that you can easily identify. Anything at all, doesn't matter. It could be the worst disease that someone could dream of, or it could be you hurt your finger. But it's being painful and maybe very inconvenient. It might be your forefinger that you're using all the time and you're in the kitchen and whatever. It could be painful because grease or something is getting in the cut and you didn't bandage it. So instead of saying there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter, say there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in, and then name whatever the problem is. Or you could say in matter, which includes whatever the problem is. And you can add other words on, like it's not in matter, it's not in mortal mind, it's not in animal, mineral, vegetable. It's not in anything that is ungodlike. Everything that I just said could be used all together. And the next one says, all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Think about how comprehensive that is. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. That means that we are included because it says infinite manifestation. I mean, it says in Genesis 1 that man is made in the image and likeness of God. That includes you and me and everyone. So when you're reading that statement in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 and 27, put your own self in there. Therefore, I am an image and likeness of God. And you know, it's other places that you can read easily. Look at Habakkuk, about whether God is good and bad. Most people think that God is good and bad. Insurance companies love to blame a storm on God. And they say that's an act of God and therefore you're not covered. They've been doing that forever. They only do it because they can get away with it. How about getting your friends together and going down to see the insurance company and tell them that you don't agree with this. The God that you believe in is a good God. And show them what Habakkuk says in the Bible. It says God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. Do you think he could create evil? If his eyes are too pure to see it? He's all seeing. There's so many things you could do. Thomas Burke. Or no, I think his name's Ed Burke. Before Mary Baker Eddy's day, I think it was in 1700s. He said that evil triumphs when good men do nothing. We have the quote on our website. We've had it up there for a long time. Evil triumphs when good men do nothing. What do you think that means? It means that we may know that there's a problem, but we just point the finger to someone else and say, well, let him fix it. Suppose we're down and out. We have no money and we have no food, shelter, and clothing. In fact, Wentworth Winslow, he has 4 books, and they're full of short articles on a wide variety of topics. And one of the articles discusses about a man went to see God, and he knocked on the door. An angel answers the door, says, how may I help you? And he says, I came here because I understand God has everything. She said, yeah, that's right. We've got everything. Whatever you need, we've got an infinite supply. So the guy started listing off the things he needed. And he stated them exactly the way he understood. I've been evicted from my home. I have no place to stay. I have no money because I was let go from my job. So I have no money to buy food. And look at these clothes I'm wearing. They need to be replaced with new ones. And he went on to describe a few other things that he needed. And she said, well, we have everything, but we don't have what you need. You see, what he was defining was everything in material terms. And what God has that's infinite is spiritual. But the symbol is invisible things. Just like the beauty of God, or the aroma of fragrance of God, is in a beautiful rose. The flower. The rose, R-O-S-E. There is enough for everyone's need because it's infinite in supply, because it's an idea. And if we cultivate, if we nurture, that's the motherhood quality of love, if we nurture the truth about what we really need, we don't need something that is made out of matter. We need to reform our thought about it. And when we reform our thought about it, we will be supplied in ways that we need to be supplied of what we thought we were out of. There's a story about a very needy family, and they had several children, and they were living in a one-room apartment. One room. They had several children and a husband and wife living all in one room. And so they struggled and struggled and struggled. And one day, a pastor of a local church was visiting people in the neighborhood to introduce himself. He was a new pastor. And he knocked on their door. And he introduced himself as a pastor of the church down the street and so forth. And the father was so grateful that he came to see them. And he said, "How is everyone doing in the family?" And the father said, "Well, you can see what kind of circumstance we have here. All these children and me and my wife, we're all living in one room. We're doing terrible. I'm glad you asked." And the pastor said, "I can help you. I know exactly the solution. And I'll be back here in a couple of days with this solution." So he comes back. And what do you think he brings with him? 6 goats. 6 goats. And you know, a goat will eat anything. A G-O-A-T. 6 goats. 6 of them. And so the father answers the door, and, you know, the pastor has these goats with him. And the father says, "Well, what's this all about?" And he said, "Never mind." And he pushes the goats in the door. And he says, "I'll be back in a week." And he leaves. He doesn't say, talk about anything. He just pushes the goats in the door and closes the door and says he'll be back in a week. The father doesn't know what to do. He's supposed to be providing for the family. And they had a miserable time before they had 6 goats that are now living in the one room with the people, with his children and his wife. The pastor has a big grin on his face as he's walking back to his church. So the end of a week goes by, and so the pastor does what he said. He went back to see the people. Knocks on the door. The husband comes to the door really happy and invites him in the house. And all the children are so happy. His wife is happy. Everything is just wonderful. And so the fellow asks, you know, the pastor asks him, "Well, how's everything going now?" And he said, "Well, you can see. We're all happy as a lark. Yeah, we're very happy." Well, the pastor knew that he had the right solution for him. They weren't grateful for what they had. Homeless people don't even have one room. People with more children may have a smaller one-room facility. Or maybe they're living on the street. If we are not grateful for what we have, and it should be expressed in spiritual terms, not material terms, it's not that we're grateful for a house or grateful for transportation or food or whatever. We should be grateful for the spiritual quality of which those things are symbols. A home is a symbol for security and unity, for example. Transportation is a symbol for efficiency. Instead of walking or running, you're in a car that goes a multiple speed of what you could walk or run. That's a form of giving. Giving gratitude. Mary Baker Eddy says, if we don't give gratitude for truth, life, and love, we're not grateful. She doesn't say if we don't give gratitude for food, shelter, and clothing. She says truth, life, and love. You can take the entire statement of being, scientific statement of being, every sentence, you can do something with it that make it apply to yourself. And at the end it says, and therefore man is not material, he is spiritual. You can say, therefore I am not material. Why? Because I am a reflection of God. And what is God? God is spirit. not matter. You see how you can link yourself directly through spiritual terms to the message that it's saying in that scientific statement of being? As a closing prayer, I will state it just in its original form and leave it up to you to modify it to make it apply directly to the situation at hand in your life. Here it is. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is His image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. Amen. This has been a prayer treatment focusing on the first two steps of how to experience effective healing. It begins with the word love, because love means that we cultivate, we nurture what needs to be nurtured. And if we think we have something missing in our life, then that means that we need to cultivate the facts about love. Because love means protection. It means fulfillment, not lack, not absence of wholeness, but it's a statement that wholeness is already part of our existence. And all we have to do is appreciate it, confirm it. You could be out of food, shelter, and clothing, but you should deny it and you should say, thank you, dear Father, Mother, God, for giving me everything I need. Everything I need. If you give a list of everything you think you don't have, you're confirming the wrong thing. You're confirming the evil, the material conception, instead of the truth that you're not seeing, or hearing, or feeling, or tasting, or smelling. Gratitude is a solution for lack, every time. And don't predetermine what you think you need, because you probably don't know. Because if you have a lack of something in your own thought, then you're missing something in your thought that you need to replace with abundance. You think God is not able to provide something that He provided in Genesis chapter 1, the end. Maybe it ends in chapter 2 in the first 3 verses. But after chapter 3, after verse number 3 in chapter 2, then it goes right into the Adam and Eve story. So right at the very end, before the Adam and Eve story begins, He says, and everything that He made was very good. Habakkuk says, God is of too pure of eyes to behold evil. We can dwell on whatever we want to. We can dwell on a lie about what God is. Because God's image couldn't have a lack unless God has a lack. And if you are referring to God as someone that is in big lack, you're not ready to begin to study. Or maybe you should read those last 101 pages in the textbook. They're still in there. They weren't cleaned out like some things were. This is the end of this treatment, and it is Sunday, June 28th at 3:07 in the morning. And one more thing I want to say is that if you have any question about anything in this prayer treatment or any of the other some 500 prayer treatments on the website, anything in Mary Baker Eddy's writings, anything in the writings of anyone on our website, and we have over 100 authors, anything in the Bible, you're welcome to make contact with us, and we will be very pleased to have a personal conversation with you on the phone and answer anything you would like to ask. In the footer, which is the same on every page, there's an icon in the lower left corner that is a picture of a man's head. And if you click on that, that will take you to the contact page. Or in the menu, which is the top left corner of every page, in the menu, it's the bottom few lines where it says contact. That will also take you to the contact page. And if you'll fill that out and provide your phone number, if you're in the U.S. or Canada, we'll call you and give us a window of time that you're available. And if you're not in the U.S. or Canada, then we communicate with our patriots and friends and visitors of the website through Telegram. So just check your device that you want to communicate with, and if it's a cell phone, it's already on there, and you just have to activate it. We're available almost 24 hours a day. As indicated, it's 3 o'clock in the morning right now, and we're available around 20 hours a day. That's U.S. time. Thank you for listening, and we hope to hear from you if you have any questions. The end.